This is the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman.
Truth in Broadcasting.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers of peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. It's Valentine's Day, and a happy Valentine's wish to my sweetie, to Louise. 35 years we've been married this year. And Sean Taylor, our producer, she was married 20 years this year, so she sends her Valentine's greetings along to Rod. And anyhow, here it is, Valentine's Day. And apropos of such, we have Carrie Lucas with us. She's the vice president of the Independent Women's Forum, IWF. And the Independent Women's Forum wants to take back the date, rescue romance from the radical feminists and the hookup culture. Hey, Carrie, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks so much for having me back on.
Tell us about these radical feminists and this hookup culture.
I think we're all familiar with the hookup culture. I don't think it's news to anybody that there's a lot of real casual physical activity that goes on, particularly on college campuses. But one of the things that we find, I personally find disturbing, is so much of the message, in particular in places like women's studies classes, that really suggests that women, to be a liberated woman, you also have to be sexually liberated, or if you're not having a lot of lovers, you're somehow missing out on the quintessential experience of being a modern woman. I think that's what kind of is I think the real problem. It's this unwillingness to really appreciate the role that kind of traditional relationships have in protecting women, and some of the cultural mores that used to govern dating and courtship were actually put in place not to keep women from having fun, as so much of the feminist movement really kind of implies is the reason for it, but it was actually to protect women against some of the consequences of casual sex.
If this is the case, if you're suggesting that this is, some sort of liberal plot, why is it that Massachusetts has the lowest divorce rate in the nation, 5.7 per thousand? Arkansas has the highest, 12.7 per thousand. Kentucky, Mississippi, and Arkansas, the three highest divorce rates in the nation. That born-again Christians are more likely to have divorce than non-born-again Christians, Christians of other varieties or people of other religions or no religion for that matter. Why is this so much, divorce so much, a phenomena of the folks that you seem to be holding up and celebrating?
I'm not going to blame divorce on feminists alone, and I think that there's a whole lot of reasons if you look for reasons why some places have higher marriage and divorce rates. I think that if you started to control for income, that some of that would explain what's going on. But I'm not here to blame the culture on the feminists. I think that the thing I would like is to encourage the feminist movement to really get back on board on sharing the message that women shouldn't embrace this idea of their sexuality shouldn't be the thing that defines women.
And but Carrie Lucas, the main message of the feminist movement since its inception has not been, hey, let's go out and have sex. It's been, let's have financial equality with men, and let's have a nation where people have a decent living. I mean, the conservatives try to polarize this thing by saying, oh, it's about who's having sex with whom. But the bottom line is, as you pointed out, if you don't want to have divorce, if you don't want to have promiscuity, then you do want to have a strong and healthy middle class, which means things like good union jobs, which I'm guessing you probably oppose unions, and certainly, the majority of Republicans in the conservative movement have since arguably forever, but particularly since Reagan declared war on unions, and building the middle class in the United States.
Well, there's a whole lot of, we can get into the whole class warfare and how best to build a healthy economy.
Well, I'd say class warfare is a big piece of this.
I would argue that the best way is not, to tax everybody to death and spend everybody to death. But
why not?
Let's get back to
that. Why not? Why is it that in countries like Sweden and Norway and Germany and England, where they have much higher taxes than we do, they have lower divorce rates, they have lower rates of sexually transmitted diseases, and they have lower rates of infant mortality?
Your information is flatly wrong. I mean, the out of wedlock birth rates in places like Scandinavia are much higher than what we have here in the United States. But here, I think we need to get back to the point though, and really what the purpose I think of talking about some of the problems that's going on Valentine's Day, in particular, is on college campuses around the country, you have, this idea that Valentine's Day needs to be replaced with V-Day. This is the day that people go out and have this, put this pretty, what I would consider a pretty crude play on called the Vagina Monologues. It's for a great noble purpose. Everybody agrees that we want to raise money for violence against women's shelters. But I think that the problem I have is the linking of this idea of Valentine's Day with violence, as if we can't have Valentine's Day because there's violence against women. And they, you know, on college campuses.
But why are you attacking the Vagina Monologues when the essence of the Vagina Monologues as a play is against violence against women?
No, I just think that we need to.
You're attacking it in your literature.
You know, right now on college campuses,
you're saying it's emblematic of a hookup culture, and it's not about that at all.
Well, you have feminists out there who have shirts on that say, "What does your vagina smell like?" This is supposed to be a big moment of empowerment for women.
Because one crazy woman has one crazy T-shirt. Come on, you can't
paint.
That's
not one crazy T-shirt. This is a movement of crazy T-shirts, and that's what we're talking about on college campuses. We shouldn't be out there encouraging women that to be empowered, you don't need to.
So you're saying this is a recent phenomenon from feminism?
Okay, all right.
I have to say, as a man, that I think that men are a big piece of this, and frankly, the whole sexual liberation of the 60s and all that, I think was very anti-feminist, ultimately. I think it worked to the disadvantage of women, and in that regard, I suspect that you and I agree.
Absolutely.
But here, for example, let me just share with you, you know, the writings of a fairly famous fellow. He says, he's writing to a friend of yours. He says, "I repeat my former advice, prefer old women to young." He said, and he lists a bunch of reasons. He says, "You call this a paradox and demand my reasons. They are these. Because women, when they cease to be handsome, they study to be good. To maintain their influence over men, they supply the diminution of body with the augmentation of utility. They learn to do 1,000 services, great and small, and are the most tender and useful of all friends when you are sick. Number 3, because there's no hazard of children. Number 4, because through experience, they're more prudent and discreet." He's talking about having affairs with people. Number 5, "As in the dark, all cats are gray. The pleasure of corporal enjoyment with an old woman is at least equal and frequently superior, every knack being in practice capable of improvement. Number 8, they are so grateful." This is from Ben Franklin. This is nothing new, this hookup culture that you're talking about.
Absolutely. There has been infidelity. There has been out of wedlock, there's been out of marriage sex.
It's just gone by different names in every generation.
Absolutely. But you don't think that there's something qualitatively different when we have, 11 and 12 year olds right now who think that if they're a virgin, they're not cool?
I think the big problem with 11 and 12 year olds like that is A, that we're seeing the age of puberty having dropped 2 years because clearly we've got something nasty in our food. Number one. Number two, we've got a corporate culture driven mostly by the Republican right, big, huge Republican donating corporations who are pumping this crap into our culture, that are suggesting to little girls that they should become sex objects. And number three, that we've got groups like yours who are out there saying, and by the way, let's not inform them about how their bodies work or what sex is all about.
That's cool. You obviously don't know anything about my group if you think that's what we're saying.
Well, if I'm wrong, I apologize.
I think that.
If you're in favor of sex education, I take it back. Are you in favor of sex education?
I'm absolutely in favor of sex education. I'm in favor of parents deciding what that entails. I don't think we should have one size fits all decisions about what and when sex education should take place.
So you're not in favor of comprehensive sex education in our junior high schools.
It shows that you are a true totalitarian when you say that if I'm not in favor of a government public school deciding exactly what my daughters should learn and when, that I'm some kind of.
I'm talking about biology here. It's science.
Kids should learn the birds and the bees. The question is, when you look at what goes on in a lot of sex ed classes, some of it is actually is definitely promoting this idea of sex outside of marriage as a good thing.
Never. I defy you to find one example, Carrie, of any sex ed teacher in the United States saying, "Gee, you should have sex outside of a marriage. It's a good thing." It has never happened, to the best of my knowledge.
Without an idea of
give me one example.
Go to the I wrote a book called The Politically Incorrect Guide to Women, Sex, and Feminism, and there's a chapter that it talks a lot about what sex education entails. And there's a lot of things that parents, if they went in there and saw what the suggested curriculum from this, from the SEIUS, I think it's the major sex education association, what they recommend is being taught to like 5 and 8 year olds. And a lot of parents would go, gosh, that's crazy. I don't want my kid taught that. And if you want your kid taught that, great. God bless. If you want to go to a school that does that, that's fine. I just don't think you should force all parents to have their kids taught what you think is right. Why not just give us all free choice?
So you're suggesting that we should force schools not to teach something?
No, I don't care what.
And I'm the totalitarian.
I think the parents should have the power to decide where their kids go to school.
Okay, well, you know, that's a whole other topic, but people can read about it over at IWF, the International Women's Forum, the Independent, excuse me, Women's Forum, Carrie Lucas. Carrie, thanks for coming on and having a spirited discussion with me.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
I appreciate it. 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program. Happy Valentine's Day, by the way, Carrie.
You're listening to Tom Hartman, defending America from the weapons of mass deception.
Sometimes I feel I've got to run away. I've got to get away from the pain you drive into the heart of me, the love we share.
Happy Valentine's Day. Welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The Tom Hartman Program, listener-supported radio, supported by you, our listeners, supporting our sponsors, our radio stations, and our sponsors like our national sponsors, like SEIU 1199, 200,000 health and hospital workers, fighting for quality, affordable health care for all Americans, because it should be a right, not a privilege in the United States. And to that, apropos of that, and this really, ultimately, I think, this whole issue of, you know, sex ed and hookup culture and everything else gets back to health, physical health, emotional health, mental health. In Oregon, and this is fascinating, if any of you out there, if this is happening in your state, to the best of my knowledge, it's not, it hasn't. But if it is, let me know. I'd love to hear about it. The Oregon House of Representatives had just voted 31-29. That's on a party line, but it passed. Straight party line. Every Democrat voted for it. Every Republican voted against it. To say that in the state of Oregon, health care is a right, not a privilege. And it's going to be on the ballot, and we the people will get to vote on amending our Constitution to say that. That's a big deal. That's a really cool thing. One of the other things, you know, I think it's, I'm not going to defend a hookup culture, a casual sex culture. I don't think it's a healthy thing. I don't think anybody defends that. And I don't think, frankly, anybody ever has. It's a concern to all of us. There is, however, a change that is happening right now in the age at which people are getting married, and obviously people are going to have sex by and large before they get married. Not everybody. There are some people who wait until they get married, but by and large people do. They live together, they have sex or whatever, and this might be something that is in some small way even driving this hookup culture to some extent. And that is the economic issue, that a high school diploma used to be a high school diploma was a ticket to the middle class, because you could get a good manufacturing job and you could raise a family. And so people would go to high school and maybe serve a couple of years in the Army, and they'd get out and boom, they get a job working at General Motors, and they've got it for the rest of their lives. You know, my dad working in a tool and die shop in Lansing, Michigan, providing tools and dies to General Motors, which was right up the street. Those jobs are gone, by and large. That culture is gone. And so now you've got to have a college degree. So now, instead of people getting married, you know, Louise and I got married. I was 21. She was 19. We got married young. Instead of getting married young, people are waiting until they're 25, 26, 28, 29, until they've got their degree, their advanced degree, their graduate degree, because they're so busy going through college. And then they graduate from college, and they're $100,000 in debt, and they can hardly. And so in the middle of all that, what are they going to do? What are they going to do? How, you know, and again, not to defend some kind of quote hookup culture, but I think that we are seeing cultural changes, and the best way for us to be addressing these cultural changes is honestly and openly, rather than saying, "Oh no, we're not going to talk about sex in schools. We can't have that." And then we see the highest rates of sexually transmitted diseases in those states and in those areas where they don't talk about sex in the schools. Gee, what a surprise! So anyhow, I, I, I think that this is just a terrible problem. For example, this is from the Pacific Views blog. AIDS cases rose 27% for six southern states, Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana, in the first 2 years after 2000. 27%. Those such cases only rose 11% in the Midwest, where sex education is more widely available. Those six states are in a lot of trouble. As this one researcher, Mr. Wetton, said, he said, you're better off being born in Costa Rica or some South American countries than in Durham, North Carolina. In addition, the nation's highest rates of chlamydia and gonorrhea remain in southern states, many of which are plagued with high poverty levels, poor health care resources, and low levels of health insurance coverage, and, I would add, low levels of reasonable sex education in schools. And then they had a program in Philadelphia where they were having women practice condom use and role-play negotiations for safe sex. What happened? 1 year later, girls in the skill-based program, where they were taught how to say no. That's the real bottom line. Not just taught, you must say no, but actually taught how to. In the context of also, and by the way, here's the whole range of, here's how your body works, and here's all the things that can impact it. They found that 1 year after this training, 10% of these girls tested positive for sexually transmitted diseases versus 18% in the general population in the same city and 15% in a program that only talked about sexually transmitted diseases. So I think that there's a middle ground here. Yes, let's tell people to say no. Let's tell them how to say no, and let's give them the information. And you see almost a reduction in half of sexually transmitted diseases. Mary in Memphis, Tennessee. Hey, Mary, about a minute before our break. What's up?
Oh, hey. Glad to be on the air. I just wanted to comment on the woman you had on the show. You know, it seems every so often somebody wants to pop up their head and, you know, put the sex back in the closet and blame the feminists for all the problems. But, you know, I thought I was having fun. I'd like to hear more about how actually, you know, the hookup culture and things that involve a lot of the new ways that people have of communicating and dating with the internet and text messaging and all that. I'd like to hear more about how that's actually, you know, romance is still thriving. It's just in a new
in a different way. Yeah. And I suspect you're right. I mean, my grandmother was a flapper. I mean, that was a wild culture. And I think that romance is still around. So you didn't realize that you were a victim of the feminist culture?
I had no idea.
Okay. Mary, thanks a lot for the call. Great talking with you. 27 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
The dream is fading now. I'm staring at the door. I know it's over cause my feet have hit the cold floor. Check my reflection, I ain't feeling what I see. It's no mystery. Whatever happened to a passion I could live for? What became of the flame that made me feel more? And when did I forget that I was made to love you? I was made to find you.
Happy Valentine's. 34 minutes past the hour. Strange news out there. Our strange Valentine's Day news. Well, maybe this accounts for why the bees are vanishing. I don't think so, because it's probably always been this way, but did you know that male honeybees explode after mating? Maybe that falls into the too much information category. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Jason in Georgia. Hey, Jason, welcome to the program.
How you doing?
I'm great. What's up?
The comment I'd like to make is one of the things I find the funniest is these sex education programs that promote nothing but abstinence and don't teach comprehensive sex education. The kids who go through that and the abstinence pledges and the promise, you know, the promise things, all this stuff. There's actually a higher instance of things like anal sex and oral sex with these kids.
And unwanted pregnancy as well, actually.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
Meaning thus actually also normal sex as well, yeah.
Exactly.
No, you're absolutely right.
Condoms. They're not, you know, they think that those two other types of sex don't actually count. And mm-hmm. it's it's just funny to me because it's usually the abstinence only education is promoted by people who are usually religious, and these types of activities are considered sinful by them. It's just one of those ironies in life that I find just hilarious.
Yeah, it's actually tragic, but point well taken, Jason, and thank you. And in fact, you know, part of the problem is if you say you could get a disease, and you don't explain how the body works, then people don't understand how you can get the disease, and it doesn't make sense. It's not in context. It doesn't, and it doesn't have credibility. With regard to the hookup culture, again, I just want to say, you know, I was there in the '60s. And with regard to things like the women's liberation movement and feminism, and I can't speak as a woman who was part of the women's liberation movement. I can speak as a man who was an observer of it, and the husband of a woman who was part of the women's liberation movement. And my take in the early days of this, my understanding of it, I mean, there was a part of it that came along with the legal availability of birth control pills in the early 1960s. I think the birth control pill first hit the market in 62 or 63, something like that. And that did change sexual habits of people to a certain extent. But I think the big issue is that feminism and the feminist movement was really about equality in the workplace, stopping violence against women, equal rights under the law, those kind of issues. It got flipped into, and I would argue, exploited by men, particularly during the '60s. And I was there, I saw it, and was part of it, I guess. Exploited by men as, oh yeah, let's all have sex now that we're all liberated. And I think that was the downside. That was kind of the dark side to it. And frankly, I believe that it was promoted by and large by large corporations, whether it was tobacco companies with Virginia Slim saying you've come a long way, baby, or whether it was pop culture and movies and televisions and programming. But it wasn't the feminist movement that was promoting casual sex. If anything, the other way around. And so I just it just makes me crazy when people who are, you know, rightly concerned about the future of our children, but, you know, wrongly, in my opinion, trying to take religious control of our public institutions, say, oh, it was all about those nasty feminists who really were saying, you know, we're tired of having men beat us up. We're tired of being blamed for rape because we're wearing an attractive dress. We're tired, you know, the victim as criminal stuff. Tired of having 80% of the pay of men or 50% of the pay of men. I remember, you know, one of the first times as an employer in the mid 70s when I was running an advertising agency in Okemos, Michigan, in Lansing, Michigan, and placing a help wanted ad and calling the newspaper, and the newspaper said, do you want this in the men wanted section or the women's wanted section? And we used to have those different sections in the newspaper. That's what the feminist movement was about, was saying, hey, wait a minute, isn't there something fundamentally wrong about this? Chris in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hey, Chris, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, how's it going? Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you just fine. Thank you.
Okay, cool. I just wanted to say, you know, great debate that you had with that guest. I don't remember her name because I looked up the website a while back.
Carrie Lucas.
And yeah, that's right. And I was just thinking to myself, you know, what hookup culture is she talking about? Because being a recent college graduate myself, I don't really see like a feminist advanced hookup culture. In fact, it seems to me that feminists are sort of challenging that.
That's right. It's mostly a
healthy relationship.
It's mostly a dysfunctional, horny, male advanced hookup culture. And if you want to blame somebody.
That's exactly what I was going to say. That's exactly right.
And that's what I saw in the '60s, too. And I have to say, although I don't think people were as conscious of it then as they are now, but if we're going to have a discussion, let's have a conversation about that. And, you know, again, it's not about, you know, let's blame anyone in particular, let's just call it what it is. I mean, by and large, that culture, to the extent that it exists and it's promoted on the internet, is largely promoted by men and is largely promoted by corporations that make a profit.
Yeah.
Well said, Chris. Thank you very much. Rob in Manhattan. Hey, Rob, what's up?
Yes, hi, Thomas. First of all, I just want to say very quickly, you know, that I saw you at the Strand Bookstore in November, and I did get your book.
Oh, well, thanks for showing up.
Cracking the Code, it was excellent. But I just want to say very quickly, you took some of the thunder away from me. Yes, you know, I was going to say this woman that called before about sex on the college campuses. Well, what about the men? How come they don't go around to the men and tell them what to do? Why is it always the little lady that's being sought upon?
Right. Well, this is an extension of the patriarchal, paternalistic, hierarchical, conservative worldview
that says,
you know, we've got to suppress women.
Yes, but where I disagree with you now, Tom, is this. And you can, you know, I know there's a lot of diseases out there, but I'm sorry. Part of the thing was with the sexual revolution is that women could like sex and have sex with different partners the same way with men. They weren't always the little lady that was just sought upon. And I can give you an example. You know, years ago, a woman couldn't even take a look at a man's penis unless it was in some anatomy book. You know, that's a way that she could only know, because women were hampered by this stuff because they weren't supposed to see those things.
Well, I think by and large that's still the case unless you're in an intimate relationship. And isn't that, and I mean, we have, as a culture, we've decided that there are certain parts of our body that we're going to cover up and we're not going to show. I mean, it's different in different cultures. In Saudi Arabia, if you walk up to a woman and lift her sleeve and look at her elbow, you will get a response as horrified as in the United States if you lift her skirt.
Yeah, but in this culture, we have a lot of magazines that we're always showing naked women, but not naked men at the time. But I'm just saying, pardon the platitude, but variety is a spice of life. Some people are not that, they're not that monogamous, and they do like to have different relationships, and then after a while they get tired of the pursuit. And,
I understand, Rob, but what I'm saying with my quote from Ben Franklin is that it's always been that way, and to the extent that there is an exploitation of women, by and large, it's been driven by men, not by women, certainly not by feminists, and blaming the feminist movement for it, in my opinion, is wrong.
Right, and I think he also said, by the way, if I'm not incorrect, he said sex should be like a good bowel movement.
Oh, geez. Okay. Rob, I'm sorry. I'm done with the scatological humor. Patrick in Tampa, Florida. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, how are you today?
I'm just fine, but I'll get better. What's up?
Hey, you know, I was going back to your debate with the lady about sex education. I raised two daughters. I have a 22-year-old and a 17-year-old.
Mm.
And my youngest daughter has friends who spent most of their youth in a rural part of the Southeast. And the basis of their sex education, as like mine and my wife's when we were kids, was, you know, abstinence only, don't do it, and that was about what you got. And I see these girls, they're nice girls, they're smart, they're 17 and 18 years old, and they're really, you know, one has an unwanted pregnancy, one has already been through a sexually transmitted disease, and I look at the parallel to the education that my daughters had in public school that I went in, my wife and I both, went in and sat and watched some of these classes to see, as I think parents should. And, you know, the whole idea that these classes are promoting a sexual aggressiveness or sexual easiness with the girls or kids in our high schools, I think is ridiculous.
Yeah, that's why I said give me one example. There aren't any out there. Patrick, thank you. Well said. Tim in Los Angeles, just a minute here before our break, Tim.
Hey, Tom, thanks a lot. You know what, though? What I wanted to comment about was basically Carrie and all the, you know, the women who are basically on the right, you know, like Ann Coulter or I forgot that other name, Michelle Malkin. You know, if it wasn't for the left, if it wasn't for the suffragette movement, if it wasn't for women's rights, they wouldn't have the right to speak their mind.
You're right.
They would be home. They would have to clean the house. They would have to do, you know, the stereotypical role that women are supposed to do.
And the biblical role. I mean, you know, Paul in the Bible says women should keep their heads covered and their mouths shut.
Yeah, exactly. And that there, because of, like, the women's movement,
mm-hmm.
They have the right to do that.
You're right.
And I don't know why they're so not appreciative of it.
Well, yeah, that's a good question. I don't know why either. 45 minutes past the hour. By the way, I want to remind you that the House of Representatives yesterday essentially went along with the Senate. It's still, this thing hasn't gone to conference yet, this FISA vote. It's not too late to go to callcongress.org, get a phone number, call your senators, call your House of Representatives, and say no to amnesty for telecom.
Tom Hartman, helping you win the water cooler wars. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
What's the love, y'all? What you preach and what
Happy Valentine's Day. 866-303-2270, our phone number, TomHartmann.com. If you want to drop into our live chat room and say Happy Valentine's Day to the folks in our chat room. And Rich in Birmingham, Alabama. Hey, Rich, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I'll be brief. I wanted to echo a previous caller and just say, you know, in the old days, women were supposed to be like wallflowers, you know, docile and passive and hope the right guy came along and picked them. And I think what you see in the hookup culture is women taking advantage of the sexual freedom that men have always enjoyed, empowering themselves, being aggressive, making their own choices, and I'm glad for it.
Yeah, and figuring out, is this the right guy, and is this going to work, and is this going to be the right thing for the long term? As long as it's done in a context that is safe, and I realize, and we have to acknowledge that there is some truth to the rights argument, that there is no such thing as safe sex, but as safe as possible. It's also not safe to marry somebody who's going to beat you up for the rest of your life, or you know, have a dysfunctional relationship. So yeah,
well,
I think
women should be able to exercise that right without the shame, just like men have always been able to do, and I think that's a great thing. Thank you.
Thank you, Rich. Well said. Kim in San Francisco. Hey, Kim.
Hi. I was born in 53, and I want to make clear to especially the women that are listening there, we were very often, if you look at early movies, you'll see how black men were always stereotyped as sort of a sight gag. Well, women were too.
Mm-hmm.
And when I grew up, at least in my family, women who worked were very suspect. They were suspect because they were neglecting their family.
Yeah.
It was very important to my parents that I stay slim. Why? Because my economic future very much depended on what kind of husband I would get.
Yeah.
That's a reality, folks. You don't.
Yeah, no, my mother was right up front. She went to Michigan State University and got her bachelor's degree in English literature because that's where you'd met the best men.
It's exactly. You
and that was in
the
1940s, rather.
That, yeah. And I was born in the 50s, and that's exactly what it was like, you guys. And women, look carefully on the old TV shows and stuff.
Yeah.
We had to be funny.
No,
also,
and you were born the same year as my wife, and I hope I'm not telling stories out of school. I'm looking here at Louise. But she came from a very enlightened family. I mean, her father was the assistant attorney general of the state of Michigan. He was a lifelong Democrat, a very good guy.
Wow.
Her mother is very enlightened and a regular listener to the show. Hi, Gwen. And, but, you know, her dad's notion was that they should pay for college for her brother, but not for her, because she should marry somebody.
Exactly. And because you were expected to marry somebody, and the only reason why they would pay for your college is if you hadn't met somebody yet, so that it would facilitate you meeting somebody. And let me say something else real quick, Tom, about physical education, because this was a kicker for me. My daughter was very active in phys ed. She's 20 now, but it was a joke for women of my era, of the 50s generation, because there was no Title 13. The boys would come and make fun of us in our shorts. And our phys ed, you guys, was folk dancing. Why? Because women, girls couldn't do more because they had monthly periods. And women who love sports, and I think a lot of
that was the rationalization that was used.
Exactly.
That wasn't the why, but that was the rationalization. It was the same rationalization that was used why women shouldn't become pilots, why they shouldn't become astronauts, why they shouldn't become fill in the blank. That was the rationalization that men used. Kim, I got to move along, but you're an eloquent spokesperson for women and for feminism, and I thank you very much for the call. Candy in Ohio. Hey, Candy.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Good. I just wanted to say about the hookup culture that I'm living in. I'm a young woman. I'm 23 years old, and it seems that that's all people want, men and women the same around where I live.
Really, where do you live?
In Ohio, in a very small area.
Uh-huh. And people just want casual sex. You don't get the sense that people are looking for long-term relationships?
Right. I mean,
that's tragic.
Huh?
That's tragic.
Yeah, if you get married, it's because you have a kid around here.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we see. I have
Candy, I wonder how much, to what extent do you think that might be tied into the economic status of your community? Do you think it would be, you know, because I don't know the economic status of your community, but
well,
if people had more money?
No, we're a real middle class area. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're not poor farmers, but
yeah.
it's just, I don't know, the way we were raised, the way we went to school, the
what's the solution?
I don't know that there is one right now. Just raise our children better.
Yeah.
Not to have to put up with some guy at a bar asking you to hook up, go home with him, and
never
talk to him again.
Yeah, I agree with you. And going to a bar in the first place looking for your partner is not the place to start. But, Candy, thank you very much for sharing your story with us. Vivian in Tucson, Arizona. Hey, Vivian.
Hello. What I wanted to say is that in the Netherlands, their rate of teen pregnancy and abortion is 10% of ours in the United States.
That's right, one-tenth.
Exactly, one-tenth. And that's because they have comprehensive sex education from kindergarten on, age-appropriate, of course, and they also have the easy availability of birth control devices. Those two things is what seems to really keep the abortion rate and the teen pregnancy rate down.
Yeah, and we're now seeing in study after study in the United States, now that we've had, you know, a dozen years or so of, in various places in the country, abstinence-only education, that it melts down. It's a disaster. It's bad for girls. It's bad for boys. It's
exactly.
Bad for kids in general. Thank you, Vivian. I appreciate it. Tom in Grand Rapids, Michigan. A minute before we got to wrap up the show here, Tom, on this hour anyway.
Hey, Tom, how are you? Good to talk to you.
Thank you.
My thing, what I told your screener, whether it be the sex education or whether it be prayer in school or whether it be anything, why would a Christian, and I am a man of faith, why would a Christian send their children to a secular government school and expect the teachers that are there to teach religion? I don't understand that.
Well, I wouldn't want them to, frankly, because they may be teaching a different brand of Christianity than the one that I subscribe to, or a different brand of fill in the blank. I mean, yeah, I agree with you. And this is why Jefferson and Madison were so adamant that there be this wall of separation between church and state. And our schools in the United States, by and large, are run by the state. There are some schools who are religious, and you know, God bless them. If somebody wants to send their kids to a religious school, great. But we're talking about the vast majority of Americans. 57 minutes past
the hour. The Tom Hartman Program, for your minimum daily adult requirements of sanity. Tom Hartman. Tom Hartman Program. Tom Hartman. Talk radio for the rest of us.
And welcome back. It's Valentine's Day. In our last hour, we were examining the state of women in America. Let's talk about men. Rabbi Shmuley Botech is with us. Shalom, Rabbi.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
I'm great. Great to have you with us, Shmuley. It's been a long time since you and I were debating at the Heritage Foundation. I think that was 4 years ago.
Yeah, I still remember it. I remember it whenever someone beats up on me.
Oh, come on. Come on. You hold yourself. You do a very good job. I have this piece here from the 700 Club. Apparently you were on the shattered male ego. And you're saying that husbands, truck drivers, they feel like failures, et cetera, that American men have a problem.
Right, first of all, I didn't know that you're allowed to quote the 700 Club on your program, Tom. Well, that's pretty...
Hey, there was a time in my life when I actually watched the 700 Club.
Really? Okay. Yeah, I did the 700 Club last week, and it's the thesis of my book. I think that men in our culture are made to feel like failures. We live in a pyramid structure where the 2% at the top are the ones who are constantly being paraded in front of us. So we read about Bill Gates and the owners of Yahoo and Warren Buffett and Tom Brady, and the rest of us are made to feel that we're at various stations of the bottom. You probably saw that new study that came out just last week. It was a 10-year study across the world where people in their 40s are the most depressed of all, meaning that the midlife crisis has become a universal phenomenon. We're all made to feel like we only matter if we made money. We only matter if we rose to high political office. If you're not Barack Obama, you're a nothing. And so men begin to nurse and lick their wounds in their 30s and 40s, and they begin to sink into themselves. They no longer speak to their wives, watching instead 4 hours of television. They begin to medicate themselves either with booze or with internet porn, which is like a drug to them because it gives them this feeling of, whoa, I'm such a winner. Look at all these naked women taking their clothes off for me. They stop making love to their wives. One out of three American marriages is entirely platonic, which is shocking. We're not the oversexed society we think we are. We're positively undersexed.
Okay, and you're suggesting that this is a new phenomenon, Rebbe.
I think that in previous generations, there was a more holistic, more wholesome definition of success. I think success in previous generations revolved around five ingredients. Success as a husband, success as a father, success as a communal member, success in acquiring enlightenment and wisdom, and finally success in making money and professionally. But today there's only one criteria, and that is money. Here's proof. The most famous businessman in America is Donald Trump. Now, he's so famous that we want to apprentice ourselves to him. Now here's the question, what's he famous for? Is he famous for being a good husband? Not really. Is he famous for being a good father? He might be, but that's not what he's known for. Is he famous for being a great philanthropist? No. He's famous for only one thing. He made a lot of money. Yeah. And yet,
he's sort of the Paris Hilton of men. I don't disagree with you, Shmuley, but here's the point. It seems to me that since Reagan declared war on the middle class, the generation that you and I grew up in, where our parents, you know, we had single family, single wage earner households, and it was that Beaver Cleaver world that you are hewing to and holding up and saying was so wonderful, that it wasn't just in the United States that Reagan declared war on the middle class, and we've seen a steady evisceration of the middle class and a steady deterioration of wages to the point where now people are working two and three jobs. They're working 60 and 70 hours just to keep up and only being paid for 40 hours. They don't have time to be with their families. I would submit to you that that's happening all over the world as we're seeing transnational corporations reaching out across the world and pitting one cheap labor place against another cheap labor place and driving down the standard of living among countries that at least were developed countries and inhibiting the development of the majority of the rest of the world, and that what the things that you are identifying that I'm not by and large disagreeing with are the result, frankly, of economic factors, that being that the working class is no longer the middle class. The working class is now the working poor, the terrified working poor. And most men derive at least a good chunk of their identity from being able to provide for their families. And many men in America now, since we're talking about the United States, no longer feel safe that they can actually provide for their families. They feel like they're one job loss away from losing their home, one serious illness in their family away from being wiped out in bankruptcy. We have a system that has completely disintegrated, largely in part because of the guys on your side going off in this libertarian direction and saying, no, we're not a we society, we're a me society. To hell with everybody else, it's every man for himself.
Well, I don't completely disagree with you. I think it's a very astute observation. I think the right and the left have really harmed America. And
how has the left harmed America, Shmuley?
Well, I think the right and the left have harmed America and led to the broken American male. I'll tell you, you're absolutely right that the right's insistence on soulless capitalism, on capitalism that, you know, just get out there and make a buck and that's the American dream. I mean, could you imagine that we have so cheapened the American dream to become nothing but an economic dream?
No, I absolutely agree. You know, if you look at the Scholastic, you know, the magazine that we all saw as kids in school, for 50 years they've been doing studies where they ask kids, who are your favorite heroes? And right up through the Reagan years, it was always, I want to be like Eisenhower, I want to be like Lincoln, I want to be like George Washington, he's my hero. And basically for the last 15, 20 years, it's been Bill Gates. It's been the richest guy in town. That's who kids say they want to be like. I think that's a failure of our culture.
Right. But the culture, if we're going to look at it politically, there's a failure, as I said, on both sides of the aisle. Because the right's failure is to promote this economic dream as the American dream.
No, I'd say it goes beyond that. The right's failure has been to destroy the middle class.
Well, but it's not only that. It's this promotion of financial prosperity as the very definition of success. But on the other hand, some people on the left, and this has also led to the obliteration of the American male, have not sufficiently emphasized that we're all children of God. I don't mean one particular vision of God. I don't mean a Jewish, evangelical Christian, or Islamic vision of God. But we're all children of God. There's something of infinite value within each and every one of us. And it's impervious to financial prosperity or financial catastrophe. That there's something unique about us. It doesn't always have to be proven. And I think we Americans...
Shmuley, if anything, the left elevates that. That's what we're all about. You know, we are our brother's keeper. We do need a good comprehensive Social Security program. We do need a financial safety net. We do need unemployment insurance. We shouldn't be having undeclared and inappropriate wars against other people.
I hear you, but it's not just about It's not just about...
Well, give me an example of how the left is doing what you're saying.
No, you're looking at it. You're looking at the economic realities and whether or not people can afford to pay their bills. I'm looking at how people see themselves when they look in the mirror. Do they see a loser or do they see a success? And what I'm saying is it comes from two. Real success has to have a more holistic definition. It has to be success with the family, success with friends. But there also has to be this religious faith component, which says that you are not just a capricious cosmic accident born to accumulate. That there's something about you which has an infinite spark. There's something of infinite value, even if you're not Warren Buffett.
You know, Shmuley, you're not going to find that Democrats and liberals, by and large, disagree with conservatives on that. And frankly, if you look at some of the atheists among us, and I'm not one of them, if you look at some of the atheists among us, people like Carl Sagan, you find that they were among the people, Stephen Jay Gould and the like, who most seriously revered not just human life, but all life.
Yeah,
who saw a sacred spark in it of some sort.
Right,
and yet call themselves atheists.
I'm not in any way suggesting that an atheist does not revere human life. I'm speaking about feeling that there's something inside us which transcends just the physical.
I think that's universal. That's not right or left.
Right. Well, okay, so...
Why blame liberals for some non-existent lack of awe when we look up at the sky or as when I watched my first child being born, you know, bursting into tears? I mean, that's human.
Correct. And that's being undermined by an American culture which has transformed us back into hunter-gatherers.
To the extent it's being undermined, it's being undermined by, you know, AT&T and Marriott being two of the largest purveyors in the world of pornography that's available to children in hotels and on cable TV systems. It's being undermined by cosmetic companies promoting anorexia. It's being undermined by large transnational corporations and the Republican politicians that they by and large pay off.
Tom, it's also being undermined by parents who constantly tell their children they have to get A's. They focus on success rather than on character.
Because Reagan has so destroyed the economy that if you don't, you're not going to have a decent job and be able to raise your kids.
Yeah, but a lot of this isn't solely political. I mean, the culture is sort of apolitical, I think. And Hollywood also gives us this message that fame and celebrity gossip, if people talk about you, you've made it. But if you're unknown, if you're just one of those decent people who does their children's homework, you're a nothing because no one heard of you.
Well, you and I agree on that. You and I absolutely agree on that. And let me thank you for being with us, Rabbi Shmuley Botich. Excuse me.
Yes.
Shmuley, SHMULEY.com, the website, his books, 10 conversations you need to have with your children. Thanks, Shmuley.
The Tom Hartman Program, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy.
Welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And I meant to say to Shmuley as we were leaving, hey, Tadaraba, Lahitro. But I forgot. Anyway, it's Connie Rice lying before Congress. This is a felony, as I recall, lying before Congress when you're under oath. And it's an impeachable offense. Of course, there's all this buzz about Condi as vice president. So, you know, and Cheney certainly has a long tradition of this. So maybe she's just practicing. But she was testifying before the House Foreign Affairs Committee yesterday. And Robert Wexler said, quote, isn't it true that you had intelligence that cast doubt on your repeated claims? End quote. And she said, no, it is not true. And the fact of the matter is, it is well documented that she had enormous amounts of intelligence that cast doubt on the claims and chose either to ignore it, diminish it, or in some cases even hide it. And if you go over to AmericanProgress.org, they have the whole list. I mean, it's just this is not like it's some kind of secret. Over 900 overt, explicit, and intentional lies out of the Bush administration in the run-up to the war with Iraq, right there. So anyhow, that's certainly worth pointing And Mr. Mukasey says if Bush wants a signing statement, he's going to have to do the waterboarding himself. Say what? And we'll get back to that in a little bit. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And if you want to drop by our live chat room, TomHartmann.com or AirAmerica.com. And a lot of stuff on our discussions today. Elizabeth in Vancouver, Washington. Hey, Elizabeth, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Tom. I really appreciate everything you do for us. I wanted to talk about the your first guest this morning, the woman talking about, among other things, women's liberation movement, sex education in school, all that sort of stuff. I was raised in a very religious family and was exempted from sex education in school. And the second time my first husband brought venereal disease into the household, I began to realize that something was wrong in my knowledge of how the body system works, the whole culture. My mother, who is 89 and is in a nursing home, was recently lamenting about how she didn't know how her body worked. And I really needed to pay attention to how my body worked. And I sort of indicted her for failing as a parent to make sure I got the education or that she had the education she needed. And I, one last point, I am very annoyed every time I hear comments about the number of teenage, unwanted teenage mother pregnancies. And I always am amazed that there isn't some kind of complaint about the number of, therefore, teenage fathers who never are mentioned. There's never any responsibility for the teenage fathers.
Right. I agree with you on all points. And I would add that in my humble opinion, this long term, I mean, this is in our culture, goes back to the Puritan age. And I think that we can probably lay a lot of this at the feet of crazy Queen Victoria, who really began this hysteria. Although the Puritans, you know, you can take it back to Oliver Cromwell and the Puritans. But this fear of discussion of sexuality is part and parcel of the keep them barefoot and pregnant oppression of women.
Yeah.
And I would say it's just part and parcel of the whole thing. And to some extent, that even tracks back to the idea that, as the Archbishop of Bogota once said to me in a very angry rant when Elizabeth Blinken, who was with me, they had offered us an old monastery down in the Medellin Valley that had been shot up by the rebels if we wanted to use it for community for orphans, and we had to turn it down because it was in the middle of a war zone. But I went in to talk with the Archbishop. Elizabeth went with me. She wasn't supposed to speak. She finally did. She spoke up, and she said, "Sir, can you please..." Birth control was legal in Bogota, in Colombia at the time. And I read about it in my book, The Prophet's Way. And she said, like I said, she wasn't supposed to speak to him because she was female, right? She could come into the room, but I was the one who was supposed to speak. But she said, "Sir, birth control is legal in this country, but the pharmacists are afraid to prescribe it because they're afraid that they'll burn in hell forever. And can't you offer a dispensation to pharmacists or something like that?" And he wouldn't talk to her. He pointed at me and he started pounding his fist on the arm of his throne, the arm of the chair, this giant throne, going, "Women know when they're fertile. This is all the cause of women. Women brought all this into the world. Don't you know about Eve eating the apple? This is all the cause of women." And he just went off on this rant. And it's like, you know, and that mentality has been around for 7,000 years, and we're seeing the tail end of it. We're seeing the last gasp echo, you know, hanging on to that rope, and, you know, all the more the tragedy. But I think that that's really what it is. What we're seeing is frankly and simply and straightforwardly the tail end of the oppression of women.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
And
may it rest in peace.
Yes, indeed, may it. Elizabeth, thank you very much for the call. And may it rest in peace. It wouldn't be a fine thing if it went away and went away forever. And now we have, on the flip side of this, here we have a woman running for president of the United States. I mean, we really have come a long way. And I hate using that phrase because it was so co-opted by that tobacco company in order to kill women. Specifically, to kill women. And, we see these things happen. I mean, every movement for the good seems to be co-opted by an equal even movement for the evil. We need to sort them out. 27.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartmann Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Welcome back to the radio. Tom Herman with you, 34 minutes past the hour. Our telephone number, toll-free nationwide, 866-303-2270, tomhartman.com, airamerica.com for blogs and message boards and all, you know, chat room and all that kind of cool stuff. Let's see here. David, you wanted to talk about Carl Sagan, one of my favorite topics. Hey, David.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Great. Did I get something wrong about Carl?
No. In fact, I wanted to commend you for defending me. I'm one of those atheists you guys were talking about. And Carl Sagan's a big hero of mine. I've read most of his books.
I'm a big defender of atheists. I just think that evangelical atheists should own up to the fact that they're members of a religion, too. It's such a, did I just stir up a hornet's nest here for you?
I thought, you know, the thing I want to say is what drives me crazy is when a religious person implies or outright says that, as an atheist, I can't be moral and ethical, and I believe my family is very moral and ethical.
Right. Yeah, I agree. It is so wrong. And what was it last night? I think on the Daily Show, Jon Stewart played Mike Huckabee saying, you know, we've already got 10 laws. That's all we need. 10 commandments. Oh, so when my child talks back to me, I'm supposed to stone him to death.
Exactly.
Wait a minute.
I was riding the Alaska State Fair. I'm a fisherman in Southeast Alaska, and there was a Bible in my stateroom, and I picked it up, and I just opened it up to a random page, and I got the story of Job, and I found it very fascinating.
Oh, yeah. Satan and God conspiring to torture a guy.
Exactly. Hey, I have a story for you about my daughter.
Sure.
If I can, real quick. A couple of years ago, we were in Juneau, Alaska, and she went into a restroom, and she found a wallet, and she opened it up and she saw two things. One, that it belonged to a tourist from England. And the second thing was it had a stack of $50 and $100 bills that was about an inch thick. And I know I was paid in $100 bills one time for a fishing trip. And I know what an inch thick stack of $50 and $100 bills is. It's thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
She came right out and handed it right over to, we were at a little lodge and she found management, handed it right over. That's what we teach in our family.
Yeah.
And then I hear, even I've read Barack Obama's book, there's even a sentence in there where he implies the same thing, that without religion we can't be moral and ethical. It makes me crazy.
Yeah, it makes me crazy, too. I didn't know, and I don't know that that's in Barack Obama's book, but if it is, I strongly disagree with it. David, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. 866-303-2270. Lori in Los Angeles. Hey, Lori.
This sounds like a different topic. I heard you a few minutes ago say something about the rights of women and that it is improving. I have to tell you, as a 73-year-old trying to get out of a financially abusive marriage, that women really don't have any financial rights in this country. We're responsible for all of the debts that get accumulated, whether we know about them or not. When we try to get out, we're held hostage by our husbands, and then we're held hostage by the family lawyers who take the rest of it. One attorney said to me, when you got women's liberation, you got all the responsibilities and none of the rights.
Hmm.
It's a dirty little secret that nobody wants to talk about.
Yeah.
And then they ask us why we don't leave. We don't leave because it's either emotionally and financially eliminating, or it's fatal.
Yeah, well, just like with, we say we ended slavery, we ended, we passed anti-discrimination laws with regard to race. Racism is still alive and well. We say we gave women the vote and we had women's liberation. Well, no, you're absolutely right. We have so far to go on both of these. You know, Republicans.
I will probably be homeless in 6 months, and I've done all the things that I needed to do to protect myself.
I'm so sorry to hear that. Lori, thank you for sharing your
story. I'm not the only one, so please keep talking about it.
Yes, I will. I will.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling and sharing it with us. You know, Republicans in the Senate for 20 years now have blocked the passage of the Equal Rights Amendment, which is one single sentence, which says that people shall not be discriminated against on account of gender. I mean, it's mind-boggling. For 20, 25, 30 years, Republicans year after year have blocked allowing we, the people of the United States, to vote on the Equal Rights Amendment. Absolutely amazing. CJ in Oakland, California, you want to say, change the subject to Congress. That's a fine one and near and dear to my heart. What's on your mind?
Yes, it's a pleasure to finally be able to speak to you, Mr. Hartman.
And I'm just curious as to what exactly is it going to take for us to get some congressmen and senators in office who will pursue the high crimes this corrupt Bush administration has committed.
What it's going to take, I can tell you real simply, CJ, what it's going to take is that right now we have about 40, just a little short of 40 members of the House of Representatives. We only have, I think, a 32-seat majority in the House, Democrats do. But they have about almost 40 of those Democrats are actually from red states. They represent largely Republican districts, and they're terrified. And many of them are very conservative. And what it's going to take is for, like, what PDA just did yesterday in Maryland to replace the conservative Democrats with progressive Democrats in on the one hand, and on the other hand, replace Republicans with Democrats who are willing to stand up so that there is such a large, so that there is a true majority, a true progressive Democratic majority in the House of Representatives, and to get more than 60 Democrats in the Senate. That's what it's going to take. And, frankly, in my opinion, it's going to take more competent leadership in the Senate than we have from Harry Reid. I'm not yet willing to take on Nancy Pelosi in terms of condemning her leadership style, because I do understand how the numbers are there in the Senate. I mean, she's really stuck with that situation with the number of, or in the House, with that number of members of the House who are basically representing red districts, and you know, if they want to get reelected, they have to do what they have to do. But in the Senate, at least Harry Reid, he has the tool of the filibuster. He could have been using it. He could have been doing political theater the way the Republicans did so often when they were in power, and he has chosen not to. And to me, that just seems like weakness and incompetence. But, CJ, that's the bottom line. And we've got to get PO'd, and we've got to call our members of Congress and tell them that we're upset and speak out and show up at the local Democratic Party meetings and show up at the caucuses and participate. And if you go to callcongress.org, you will find a bunch of toll-free numbers that you can use to call your members of Congress and say, enough already, enough already. It is time for Democrats to stand up. Darlene in Seattle. Hey, Darlene. Darlene, you're on the air. No Darlene. Okay. Andre in South Carolina. Hey, Andre, what's up?
Hey, Tom. How you doing today?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Good. I wanted to thank you personally for your guest was kind of, I'm an atheist. I'm in South Carolina, and I was a Catholic and then a Baptist and now an atheist. So I've heard every line, but it appears to me that the conservative right is doing a full court press. I had an editor from Crisis Magazine explain locally here that if you're an atheist, you can't understand natural law or the Constitution. What they're intending on doing is dividing us. And my cry is to the moderates, to the moderate Christian, the moderate Jew, the moderate Islamist, please do not allow these people to come in these instruments of what I call of division, to come in, rally you up, and then cause you to discriminate openly against people who have the same concerns as you. Our country, our children, our welfare, we all the same way. So don't let these people come in and manipulate you again. Obviously, if you look back, they manipulated us into this war.
Yeah, I was going to say, Matt, you said, you know, Andre, you said that, you know, they're fixing to do this, they're starting to do it. They've been doing this, well, arguably throughout the history of this country, but they've been doing it on steroids since the Reagan administration and the whole perpetual campaign, the whole idea of the campaign that never ends from day one, and manipulating the media. It was Reagan who aggressively started manipulating the press corps, saying, if you want to have access to us, then you're going to have to play our game. You're going to have to go along with us. But, you know, spot on. You said it very well, and tip of the hat to you for it. Thank you. Matt in Garfield, New Jersey, speaking to the political center that Andre is saying we need to reach out to, I suspect that you would agree with Jim Hightower's comment that the only thing you find in the middle of the road are dead armadillos and yellow stripes.
Exactly. I want to challenge conventional wisdom here. Everyone keeps saying, and it's perpetuated by the corporate media, that it's the left and the right that are so polarizing. But if you look at it, look at the right. Either you have your religious right, who on economic issues are more liberal, you know, social justice, a lot of them, feed the poor. And then you have your libertarians, who are, you know, considered the right. And I disagree with them, but, you know, they stand on principles. They say, we shouldn't be giving the money to corporations. We shouldn't be giving money to people. Nobody gets money. You're on your own. And if you look at the left, you know, left, or, you know, the people pretty much to the far left or to the left, you know, they stand on their principles. But it's the people in the center who have been corrupted, who have been bought and
sold
by...
If I may just slightly recalibrate your language, the far left is the Communist Party in the United States.
Well, the far,
and there's maybe
there
45
no
of them left. You know, those people like you and me who are characterized as the left by bozos like Bill O'Reilly are actually talking about middle America. The average American wants strong social security, wants to be able to check a card and be a member of a union, wants to know that they have decent wages, wants trade policies that keep jobs in the United States, wants clean air, wants clean water, doesn't want to see the environment melt down and have, you know, tornadoes and storms and rising sea levels and penguins dying off. They want the wild places protected. All of these things that are characterized as extreme left positions by the hard right are actually the middle of the road. And
well, if you look at it, there is no far left, serious far left in this country.
No, there
anymore.
Isn't. No, there isn't. The Socialist Party is dead. You know, the party that my grandfather was a member of, and into, and the Communist Party is a caricature of itself. It's a joke. Tragic. You know, well, not necessarily tragically. I mean, perhaps appropriately. 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program right here in the Radical Middle.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. News without conflicts of global corporate interest. The Tom Hartman Program.
And not a moment too soon. Without a minute to spare. You touched my heart.
My song for you, Louise, Happy Valentine's Day. 9.5 minutes before the hour. 1-866-303-2270. TomHartman.com to drop into our live chat room. And Jeff in Seattle. Hey, Jeff, what's on your mind today? Jeff?
Oh, hi, yeah, Jeff. Yeah, Tom, I really, really, really enjoy your program. And I use your Reagan timeline a lot when I'm talking to friends. And... And they don't really, I watch the lights go on in their eyes, you know, when I go, you know, it started in, with air traffic controllers and breaking the unions.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it became a bad thing for middle class people to make a living.
Yep.
And it's just, and folks are just going, you know, wow.
Oh, yeah. Now I remember.
Yeah.
Now I remember.
And then, and that guy that was on, these people, they drive me nuts.
Mm.
You know, and it's because it's like when a guy is worried about how he's going to make his mortgage and pay his bills, you know, is he really going to be that interested in sex?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, to put it very bluntly, that's the bottom line, is what is destroying the sex lives of America, what is destroying our marriages in America, is the destruction of the middle class. You're spot on. Jeff, thank you so much. Apparently right now the Republicans in the House of Representatives, see, this is where I say, why don't the Democrats do political theater? The Republicans just walked out en masse. They figured this stuff out. There's going to be a big headline now. GOP lawmakers walk out. It's going to be the big story for the day. At least once a day, we have had more filibusters by the Republicans in this 1 year, in this one legislative session, than in any 2 year session in the history of the United States. And yet not once did Harry Reid say, okay, let's do political theater. You guys are going to have to stand and talk about why you don't want those veterans to get those benefits. You guys are going to have to stand and talk about why you think that the Bush crime should not be investigated. You guys are going to have to stand and talk about why you think that it should be wrong to investigate the crimes of Halliburton. Never. He never did it. And here now in the House of Representatives, the Democrats have the temerity to stand up and say, well, you know, we don't think we're going to give immunity to Bush and the telecoms and the Republicans. What do? They stand up and they walk out en masse. Political theater. Come on, guys. This is what it's theater, especially in the age of infotainment. Pardon me for just, you know, going off on that. But in fact, David and Blaine Washington, you wanted to talk about that. Apparently you're watching C-SPAN. We've got it on in the studio here. What's up?
Well, the Boehner and the Republican minority just walked out of the...
You mean John Boehner? I mean Boehner. Boehner.
Phonetically, it's boner, but that's not what we're talking about now. But because there were the Republicans were motioning to adjourn and quit talking about the contempt of citation against Harriet Myers,
right.
Karl Rove, and
is that what the issue was? I didn't get the issue.
So the way that the framing it was, Congress we should be talking about passing the FISA bill. And so therefore you're not saving Americans, so we're going to walk out everybody's eyeballs should be on C-SPAN right now, and of course your show too. So at the same time.
Bless you, David. Yes, we can multitask.
That's right.
Thanks a lot, David. I appreciate the update and thank you for the call. Flo in Sunrise, Florida. Hey, Flo, you've been waiting for a while. Thank you so much. What's up?
Mr. Hartman, because it's a totally different subject, but you have the perfect name for Valentine's Day, I think.
Oh, bless you. Thank you.
The Hartman.
So does my wife. Even more so.
I know. You always mention her. She's probably very sweet.
She is.
Okay. I'd like
except when she's not. No, pardon? I'm sorry. Never mind. I didn't say that.
Louise, right?
Yes. Okay. Yes. She's sitting right here.
She's there with you.
Yeah. Louise and Sean Taylor, our producer, basically kind of run this show, and I'm the trained monkey who does the talking on the radio.
Well, she's a lucky woman to have her husband with her on Valentine's Day.
I agree.
I saw a show called Death of a Princess.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see that?
I didn't.
Frontline?
No.
It was about a Saudi princess. She was supposed to marry someone that she didn't love, and she got Americanized, went to college, had a boyfriend, and she was shot, supposedly shot, and her boyfriend was shot. They showed the shooting.
Mm-hmm.
It was controversial. It wasn't supposed to be shown here in this mm-hmm. country. But then I wondered if she was really shot or if they put someone under the, because she had like a black robe over her when they shot
mm-hmm.
her.
Mm-hmm.
So you really couldn't tell if that was her or not. So I really wonder if that was her.
Right. I don't know. I remember when that happened and I saw the news stories on
it. Yeah, Ted Koppel was saying it was controversial and shouldn't be maybe shown here. But that was talk about women's rights.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the whole point, is in these societies, women have no rights. And those
she
are
was
also
beautiful, too. She was very pretty and she loved American style of living.
All the more horrifying to
Frontline. It was excellent. But what I called about was last week I saw this little thing on the BBC News that Rupert Murdoch was going to make a bid for Yahoo.
Yeah.
And on Friday night on Charlie Rose, he had a guest that talked about Microsoft.
Bill Gates.
Taking over Yahoo. And he sounded like it was in the bag. And I said, that's not what I saw the day before. But now this morning, it said that News Corp might be in a partnership with Yahoo to have Bill Gates buy the...
Yahoo is looking for a way out of this thing. They're trying to poison pill it. It's going to be very interesting. I mean, the fact of the matter is Murdoch already does have a worldwide monopoly. He's in bed with the communist Chinese, helping them censor their... and did this for them, censoring the satellite television network over there. He owns a bunch of newspapers in the UK and in the United States. He just took over the Wall Street Journal. He owns radio stations, television stations, rather. I mean, it's downright scary. And he lost $100 million a year for 5 years before Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly made their first penny. He lost $500 million before they made one dime. That's how far he's willing to go to promote that agenda. I think that we all need to keep that in mind. 57 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, the No Boring Zone. Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Tom Hartman. Talk radio for the rest of us.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 6 minutes past the hour. And Connie Rice today. Well, first of all, the Republicans in the House doing grand theater. They're spinning this thing like,
oh, you're not willing to talk about FISA? You just want to talk about whether Harriet Myers should be held in contempt?
Yeah, how about that? How about a federal official committing a crime and we're going to hold them responsible? What a novel idea. Well, it's something the Republicans will have nothing to do with. And I'm not sure what the rules are for a quorum. I suspect it's going to take more than a simple majority for a quorum in the House of Representatives. And therefore, when all the Republicans walked out, they did shut down the process. It'll be interesting to discuss this with Bernie tomorrow. It should be a very interesting conversation. But in the meantime, here we have Condi Rice just coming right out and basically lying to Congress about this. Robert Wexler questioning her in the House of Representatives.
Startling revelations have come forward that specifically relate to your conduct prior to 9/11 and in the run-up to the war in Iraq. A recently released study by the nonpartisan Center for Public Integrity revealed that you, along with President Bush, and top administration officials, made a total of 935 false public statements in an orchestrated attempt to take this nation to war.
935 false public statements. In other words, you lied to us 935 times, and we have the proof. We have the smoking gun. We can demonstrate it.
Here's a stack of these false statements right here, all 935 of them.
And he puts his hand on a stack that's about a foot and a half high.
This study has found that you, Madam Secretary, made 56 false statements to the American people, where you repeatedly pump up the case that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction and exaggerate the so-called relationship between Iraq and al-Qaeda. Madam Secretary, can you please tell us, isn't it true that you had intelligence that cast doubt on your repeated claims that Iraq did not have weapons of mass destruction?
Now, here is Condoleezza Rice's big chance. Didn't you have intelligence that cast doubts? Now, I'm telling you, it would be impossible for an honest person to say no to that. Not even a person who never lied. Because when you have intelligence that says, well, like, you know, go back to the Cuban Missile Crisis. There was intelligence that Khrushchev was about to launch nukes. There was intelligence that he wasn't. I mean, take any issue around the world. You're going to have always dissenting voices. There's always going to be some intelligence that questions it. He's not saying was the absolute conclusion. He says, was there any intelligence that contradicted the case that you were building?
Not true, Congressman. With all due respect, I think if you look back at the key judgments of the intelligence estimate about Iraq's weapons of mass destruction, you will see that those judgments supported the views of many intelligence agencies worldwide, the views of the United Nations inspectors that
And now, I just have to pause poor Condi here for a moment and play the audio that Robert Wexler didn't have. She says, oh, yeah, the United Nations inspectors, they knew there were weapons of mass destruction.
I'm not ever suggested that they were sort of willfully and consciously lying, but I think that they wanted to jump to conclusions.
He's talking about the Bush administration.
I said to the Security Council that if something is unaccounted for, it doesn't necessarily mean that they exist. And I think there was that tendency to jump to that conclusion. We were there for 3.5 months, after all, and we did not find any smoking gun. And now that the U.S. has been, the U.K. have been there for quite some time, and they have the opportunity to interrogate people, they have had the whole cream of the Iraqi establishment in custody, and people should not be scared any longer to answer in the interviews. With this long period, I'm inclined to think that the Iraqi statement that they destroyed all the biological and chemical weapons which they had in the summer of 1991 may well be the truth.
Yeah, and it turns out it was. It was the truth. But Condi Rice continues to lie.
Iraq must have been hiding something. Our own intelligence estimates said that Iraq had reconstituted its biological weapons program, its chemical weapons program.
No,
and
that's
the
what
the only disagreement
curveball
was
said.
Whether or not they had reconstituted their nuclear weapons program, although there were certainly elements, including the CIA, that believed that they were in the process of doing so. Now, Congressman...
Excuse me, my computer has just gone into computer
hell. I take my integrity very seriously.
Yeah, right.
And I did not at any time make a statement that I knew to be false or that I thought to be false in order to pump up anything. Nobody wants to go to war.
Oh, yeah?
Saddam Hussein was a threat to this country. We had gone to war against him in 1991. President Clinton had gone to war against him in 1998. We were in a state of war with him. This was a cessation of hostilities, not an armistice, because let us remember that our pilots were actually flying missions, Southern Watch and Northern Watch, and being shot at by his air defenses. And so I'm sorry, Congressman, because you've questioned my integrity. I ask you to let me respond. Now, we have learned that many of the intelligence assessments were wrong. There have been many, many investigations of that, including Senate Select Intelligence and a number of others. And we have gone to extraordinary lengths to reform our intelligence agencies so that they can make better assessments of situations in which you have non-transparent governments that will not answer the just demands of an international community that had sanctioned and had resolutions against Saddam Hussein several times. So no, Congressman.
See, she's trying to filibuster here. She's just going on and on and on and on and on. And in fact, I mean, you know, how about even going back before that to another set of lies?
The president was aware that there were issues inside the United States. He talked to people about this, but I don't remember the Al-Qaeda cells as being something that we were told we needed to do something about.
Isn't it a fact, Dr. Rice, that the August 6 PDB warned against possible attacks in this country? And I ask you whether you recall the title of that PDB.
I believe the title was Bin Laden Determined to Attack Inside the United States.
And you did absolutely nothing. And then when it was time to go to war, it's like, oh, gee, let's have a war. This is Cindy Sheehan testifying before John Conyers Commission. And quoting Mickey Herskowitz, who was the official Bush family biographer, 20-year-old friend of the Bush family, was the guy who was hired to write the first draft of, and did write the first draft of, A Charge to Keep, George Bush's official autobiography. Of course, he didn't write the book himself at all, but he did sit for hundreds of hours of interviews with this guy so that the book could be written. And this is Sheehan quoting Herskowitz, who was widely quoted in the media.
As a matter of fact, in interviews in 1999 with respected journalist and longtime Bush family friend, Mickey Herskowitz, then Governor George Bush stated, "One of the keys to being seen as a great leader is to be seen as commander-in-chief. My father had all this political capital built up when he drove the Iraqis out of Kuwait, and he wasted it. If I have a chance to invade, if I had that much capital, I'm not going to waste it. I'm going to get everything passed that I want to get passed, and I'm going to have a successful presidency," end quote. It looks like George Bush is ready to lead this country into an avoidable war even before he became president.
Amen. And there it is. And so here you had Bush and Rice and Colin Powell and all these others, first of all, totally dropping the ball with regard to 9/11 coming. With Al Qaeda, all these screaming warnings. Hey, here's the memo. You gotta pay attention. And one of 56. You had other countries telling us it was coming, and then you had Hans Blix saying, "No, there's nothing in Iraq, nothing in Iraq at all." And then Bush gets up and stands before the American people and says,
"First, I'm asked why Iraq is different from other countries or regimes that also have terrible weapons. While there are many dangers in the world, the threat from Iraq stands alone because it gathers the most serious dangers of our age in one place."
And, I mean, he even goes on to just make things up.
"We've also discovered through intelligence that Iraq has a growing fleet of manned and unmanned aerial vehicles that could be used to disperse chemical or biological weapons across broad areas. We're concerned that Iraq is exploring ways of using these UAVs for missions targeting the United States."
It was a lie. 16 minutes past the hour.
Tom Hartman, helping you win the water cooler wars. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Texas.
just ask in any bar. Oh, I screwed the country. They still think I'm a star. Hear neighbors trust their neighbors. That's why I tap their phones. It keeps their freedom ringing. And I feel less alone. Even though I love them, that's just where I'm at. Besides, a rumor has it that one's a Democrat. Let's go to Mars.
Let's go to Mars. Yeah, that was, State of the Unions ago, as I recall. Welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, and streaming all over the planet. And Carl Wolfson's with me, and we're going to take a couple calls here together, and then Carl's going to be talking to Christy Harvey and Ellen Ratner. Carl, welcome.
Hey, I'm not used to seeing you so late in the day.
Yeah.
You're messing up my internal clock here, Tom.
There you go. Carl does the morning show on AM 620 KPOJ here in Portland, and in my opinion is one of the very best progressive talk hosts in the business, bar none.
So.
And you and I share the last hour together every day.
We do.
On the morning show.
I look forward to it. We have a robust discussion.
Indeed. And I have to boogie out of here at the bottom of the hour because I've got a flight to Reno where I will be doing my show tomorrow from KJFK in Reno, and also doing a book signing tomorrow night at 5 o'clock at the Borders in Reno, and then doing the Mensa keynote in Los Angeles on Saturday, so that should be
entertaining. What great call letters. KJFK.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is, yeah. Pretty amazing.
I think we talked a little on the morning show just last week that in 1960, when John Kennedy ran for president, the two issues that they had to face were his Catholicism and his age, because he was 43 at the time, and he was referred to as Jack Kennedy. So they went to various primary states in the media and said, please refer to him as JFK. Sounded not as young as Jack.
Sort of like LBJ.
Yes. Yes, oh, they didn't want headline writers or news writers to call him Jack Kennedy. They thought it sounded too young.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, you are a treasure trove of, you have a master's degree in political science. That might help.
Yeah,
a treasure trove.
And here I am. Hey, thanks for asking me to join you today.
Yeah, well, I'm very pleased. Let's take some calls here. Nora in Minneapolis, because this is going to be, I think, our last chance. Nora in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hey, Nora, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. I was looking to check in with you on this. Their new ingenious solution for lack of military recruitment.
Right. They're going to help you out with your mortgage after you get out. This is, I'm wondering if it's the same caveat that assuming that you don't get killed or wounded.
It sheds a huge light on the meaning and purpose of the whole mortgage crisis, doesn't it?
Well, and it also, you know, is a joke about the meaning and purpose of military service. People shouldn't be, as Jefferson said, I hope I shall never see a day come in my nation when our young men are willing to be shot at for a sixpence. And that's what we're at. It's a tragedy.
I think it comes right after what I was disturbed about of the No Child Left Behind. To me, that looked like the purpose of that was to tell all these schools that their money will be cut off if they don't allow recruitment.
I suspect recruitment was, you know, got dragged into that or may have been a piece of it. The real, in my mind, the real mission of No Child Left Behind was twofold, and thank you, Nora, for the call. Number one was to transfer an enormous amount of money to companies, testing companies, who were lobbying. This is Jim Jeffords gave me this research before he left the U.S. Senate. In fact, I included it in my book, Unequal Protection. It was back when I was living in Vermont 10 years ago that we met with Jeffords' staff, and they actually had the Congressional Research Service do the research for us and found that a multi-million-dollar testing industry, if No Child Left Behind was passed, would become a multi-billion-dollar testing industry. And now Neil Bush is part of that industry. And that was the main recipient. And then the second was, let's start tearing apart our public schools so that we can make room for vouchers in private schools and privatized schools. I mean, that was just, you know, the absolute bottom line. Charles in San Leandro, California. Hey, Charles.
Yes, you're undervaluing the precious gemstone of selective morality. In other words, if the Republicans do it, it's right. If the Democrats do it, it's wrong. So, for example, the Republicans spent $30 million investigating Clinton, which led only to Monica Lewinsky.
Actually, I think it was more like $70 million. Yeah.
Oh, okay. But, you know, it's okay for them to spend what I see is about $3 trillion on their little lie in Iraq.
Yeah. Carl, your thoughts?
Well, no one's accused the Republicans lately of being good with the people's money. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah, oh, amen. Well said. John in Manhattan Beach, California. Hey, John, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Just great. What's up?
I remember the other day you had a guest on. I think he was a Democratic attorney. You had asked him a question about whether or not they were going forward in the Congress with the articles of impeachment against Bush. And he sort of stammered around. He finally sort of said, like, it's unlikely that it will happen.
Right.
And that led me to two questions that I'd like to ask you. Do you think that he will not face an impeachment, especially if Congress passes the FISA bill? And could he
yes.
be impeached retroactively after the coming election?
No, but no. He, right. He yeah. could be indicted after he leaves office.
Right. Basically, what's happening now is they're codifying against impeachment by this FISA law.
That's right.
They're pretty
they're
much codifying what he did that was illegal. And he can come back and say, hey, the Congress said it was okay.
Yeah, they're giving him retroactive immunity.
Right, basically.
Essentially.
Absolutely.
And this is why the Republicans are pushing so hard. This is why the Republicans were willing to disrupt a memorial for Tom Lantos, one of the finest men who ever served in the U.S.
Right.
House of Representatives, the only Holocaust survivor in the House of Representatives. Hey. They were willing to disrupt this.
Yeah, they're walking.
This issue. Incredible.
I hope they walk a little farther to shuttered factories and homeless shelters.
Well
VA
said.
Hospitals where 1 in 5 are coming back from Iraq with traumatic brain injuries. Maybe the Republicans should walk past those
Amen.
Places.
I'll be turning the show over to Carl Wolfson now, and I will see you tomorrow, 27 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. 34
minutes past the hour. Carl Wolfson in for Tom Hartman. Tom on his way to Reno. He'll be broadcasting live from our affiliate KJFK, 12:30 a.m. in Reno tomorrow. Join the Tom Hartman Show then. Bernie Sanders on with him tomorrow. I always love brunch with Bernie. And I'm speaking to you from Portland, Oregon. Tom is my compatriot on the morning show at KPOJ, 620kpoj.com. If you want to check out our website, a shameless plug there, and a lot of great stuff is happening in Oregon right now. I don't know if Tom mentioned on his national show, but the Oregon legislature is meeting in special session this month. We meet every other year, but we're experimenting now with annual sessions. And yesterday, the Oregon House voted 31-29 along party lines for House Joint Resolution 100 that would amend Oregon's Constitution to make health care a fundamental right and order the legislature to adopt a plan to make health care available to every resident of the state of Oregon. It's going to go to the Senate now, and it's expected to pass there. It doesn't need the governor's signature to go on the ballot. It'll be on the ballot this fall in all likelihood for us here in Oregon. And that's a big step, declaring health care a right in Oregon. And also our Congressman, U.S. Congressman Peter DeFazio, joining Bob Wexler's call for ramping up those hearings against Vice President Dick Cheney to investigate possible wrongdoing. I actually say possible wrongdoing with a straight face, but that's how they have to do it. But Peter DeFazio adding a lot of clout to the call for impeachment hearings in the Judiciary Committee against Dick Cheney. Joining us now, Christy Harvey, Director of Strategic Communications at the Center for American Progress. AmericanProgress.org is the website. Christy, welcome to the show.
Hey, Carl. How are you?
Hey, it's great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you.
You have to stop by on our morning show sometime.
Oh, absolutely. But I've got to tell you, it is a crazy day here in Washington. I feel like the back of my head's about to come off. There's just so much going on. It's nuts.
The Republicans are walking, I see.
That walkout, it kind of reminded me of watching, you know, every once in a while, late night Sunday, if you're a nerd like I am, you watch British
You're talking
Parliament.
To the right guy.
You know how much fun it is to watch British Parliament where they, like, throw their shoes and they yell? It was exactly like that. It was actually pretty incredible.
Yeah, and of course they're protesting what the Harriet Myers and Josh Bolten contempt vote that John Conyers wants to bring up here. And as I said before the break, let them keep walking. Let the Republicans walk past those shuttered factories and homeless shelters and the VA hospitals where 1 in 5 Americans are coming back from Iraq with traumatic brain injuries. I hope they take a nice tour of the country while they're out there.
Well, as you might suspect, they walked just far enough until they found some television cameras. And that's
How about
they stopped.
That?
They stopped on the front steps of Congress where all the TV cameras were so that they could, you know, oh, they're shocked and outraged about how things were going in Congress today. So it was a pure political stunt, obviously, but Indeed. Of crazy.
Hey, listen, there's a Democrat in Tennessee. I used to live in Tennessee, went to the University of Tennessee and lived in Nashville for 5 years after college. But Doug Henry is a state senator from an area that actually includes a lot of Davidson County, Tennessee, where Nashville is. He made a very unfortunate comment, didn't he?
He did. They've been debating in the Tennessee state legislature about whether or not abortion can be legal for people who've been raped. And they're trying to, you know, do that thing that they try every year to say either no or yes or all that sort of things. So Senator Doug Henry, State Senator Doug Henry, he's an old codger. I don't think that's too disrespectful. He's an older gentleman, and he looks like a codger. He got up and started talking, almost waxing nostalgic about how, you know, rape just ain't what it used to be.
Rape, ladies and gentlemen, is not today what rape was. Rape, when I was learning these things, was the violation of a chaste woman against her will by some party, not her spouse. Today it's simply, let's don't go forward with this act.
Wow.
Wow, it's right.
Firestorm, huh?
So, under Doug Henry, first of all, you can't be raped if you're not a virgin. And, yeah, it turns out he just doesn't really understand the whole sexual violation slash attack thing.
Yeah, he doesn't get it. It's an interesting story for Valentine's Day, too, isn't it?
It really is. Luckily, the female bloggers are going nuts with this thing. One of my favorite blogs is Feministing, and the women over there just took this and ran. So he's not getting away with this sort of thing, but I still thought it was pretty interesting.
You know, it's reminiscent, Christy. Back in 1990, Clayton Williams was the Republican candidate in Texas against Ann Richards in the governor's race there, and he made a statement about rain. He said it's a lot like rape. As long as it's inevitable, you might as well lie back and enjoy it. And that's back in 1990. This is very evocative of that.
But that was 18 years ago. You would think that we'd come for, well, even for 18 years ago, that's terrible. But I don't know. I was just hoping that maybe we'd progressed a little further in this country.
There's always reality checks, Christy.
That's true. That's true.
Fortunate ones at that. Hey, listen, talking about quotes of the day, John McCain, you know, he's been against waterboarding, and where was he Wednesday afternoon when the vote was taken?
John McCain, I don't know if you know this about me, Carl, but I actually used to be, you know, not a pro-McCain, but a McCain fan, I guess, back in 2000. I thought he was a decent guy, and gosh, he broke my heart, and he just keeps breaking it.
When he kissed George Bush, that was it for me. I mean, I had some faint... you know, a faint respect for John McCain back then when the Straight Talk Express actually sounded like it hadn't lost wheels, as
right.
Barack Obama said. But when he cuddled up to George Bush after Bush and Roe trashed him in the South Carolina with those push-pull polls, push-polling, that was it for me. The man has no shame.
Well, I realized over the weekend that it's not that I really mind that he's old and set in his ways these days. I mind that John McCain has become old and set in George Bush's ways. That's
great
what
line.
Really gets me.
Great line.
But, yeah, he used to talk about, you know, just back in October, he said, waterboarding is not a complicated procedure. It is torture. He said that. That's a direct quote. And yesterday afternoon, the Senate was voting on legislation that would ban waterboarding, and he voted no.
Unbelievable.
He voted no, and that just broke that last little bit inside of me that was still, you know, on McCain's side a little bit.
You know, we're speaking with Christy Harvey. She's Director of Strategic Communications at the Center for American Progress. AmericanProgress.org is the website. That vote you're talking about, Christy, was 51-45, and what it did was restrict the CIA to the 19 interrogation techniques that are outlined in the Army Field Manual. And, you know, they on NPR, Attorney General Michael Mukasey said if Bush comes in with a signing statement on this, and, you know, George Bush has had 160 signing statements, you know, ignoring 1,200 provisions of U.S. law. I mean, we have a candidate out here, John Frohnmeyer, running as an independent, who said that alone rises to the level of impeachable offense.
Right.
But Attorney General Mukasey said to NPR yesterday that if Bush ignores the signing statement on war, if he issues a signing statement on this waterboarding bill, that no interrogation officials are going to abide by it, and Bush himself would have to do the torturing, as far as Mukasey was concerned.
Well, and I saw that, too, and I thought, hurrah, but then also, boo Mukasey. If he's out there saying things like that, why doesn't he just take that final step and say, you know what, America won't torture, and this is torture?
Yeah. Because you know why? Because then he would have to prosecute people under him who engaged in torture.
Well, yay.
Yeah,
yes. You know, it's this blank check stuff. I was watching the Stephen Bradbury hearings today, and he's the acting head of the Justice Department Office on Legal Counsel.
Right.
And the big news that everyone was talking about is he came out and said, you know, as the current interrogation methods are defined, waterboarding is against the law. But so that was good news. But then he did the same dance that Mukasey's doing, and he wouldn't turn over documents about when it had happened or if it had happened, and he just kept dancing around with this very legal terminology,
right,
and wouldn't come out and do what we really need to do to effectively regain some of our stature in the world and to protect our own troops, which is say, we don't do it, it's wrong, the end.
Right. And, you know, like you said, you know, good for Michael Mukasey, but boo to Michael Mukasey. Just about a week and a half ago, Senator Arlen Specter, Pennsylvania, was questioning Mukasey. Mukasey was testifying before Specter's committee, and Specter pretty much said flat out, George Bush has violated the FISA laws, and Mukasey was doing the dance, the kabuki dance on that. And I'm thinking, good for Arlen Specter for saying that, but then I'm thinking, as you did, boo for Arlen Specter, because if he believes that Bush has broken the FISA law, then why doesn't he support impeachment in the House?
Well, exactly, and that's what really just makes me nuts about Washington today. Even the people I support aren't going far enough. I don't know if it's because they are looking forward to their own elections or they don't feel that they have enough support of the country behind them, but here's some news. You do. You know, everybody in this country is ready for some real and serious action on things like the warrantless wiretapping and the violation of the law, like torture, and it's just time for someone to stand up.
You know, speaking of Arlen Specter, Christy, and amen to what you said, my mom called me over the weekend. My mom's 87. She's the only Republican left in our family. We grew up in a Republican family. My dad is Democrat. My sister's a Democrat. My mother's 87. God bless her. We try to keep her in on Election Day. That's what we try to do. You know,
right.
Water the plants again. Don't go out of the house. But my mom was all excited that Arlen Specter is investigating Bill Belichick, the Patriots coach, because she doesn't like Belichick for a lot of reasons. She's a sports fan. But why doesn't Specter have this same kind of passion for investigating George Bush?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, Specter came out this week, and you know, he's got such a limited amount of time to talk to people, and his whole thing this week is about how Bill Belichick of the Patriots has been cheating since 2000. Ever since he took control of the New England Patriots, he's been taping the defensive signals of his opponents. And, you know, I'm not for cheating in football. I think that Bill Belichick might be a little slimy and need to abide by the rules. But all I could think of was, really, Arlen? This is what you're concerned with this week.
Yeah, it's really amazing. I grew up in the Philadelphia area. He was DA back then. And, again, it's another thing that just drives you crazy about Washington right now with the problems we have in this country. Get your act together. Christy, it's great to talk to you. I'd love to have you on the morning show at KPOJ sometime.
This was fabulous. Thanks, Carl.
Great, Christy. It's Christy Harvey, Director of Strategic Communications at the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org. I'm Carl Wolfson in for Tom Hartman. Tom on his way to Reno. He'll be broadcasting live from KJFK, 1230 a.m. in Reno tomorrow. We'll see you back in a minute.
Hartman Program, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy.
Minutes past the hour. Happy Valentine's Day to you. Carl Wolfson, along with Sean Taylor, our producer here in Portland, Oregon, subbing for Tom Hartman. Tom on his way to Reno. He's going to broadcast live tomorrow from KJFK, 1230 a.m., our Reno affiliate. And joining us now, one of my favorite people, Ellen Ratner. Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News, talkradionews.com. Ellen, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Carl. The president today talked about how they absolutely need to pass this FISA bill, Protect America Act. Well, it's very interesting. Rush Holt from New Jersey, a congressman, said that in Justice Department's own report that they had not even been paying, the government has not even been paying some of the carriers of the lines that go to tap these people, et cetera. So they said, this is a ridiculous thing. They can't even pay their own phone bills, and they're getting cut off by these telco companies, and yet they're complaining that somehow this is going to endanger American security. Well, then what happened is that the House voted, as you know, there was no FISA bill as of yesterday. the president saying that he would even delay his trip to Africa to make that happen. So then later on today in the House, there was supposedly going to be a contempt vote on Harriet Myers and Josh Bolton. Of course, the U.S. attorney said he wasn't going to even carry out those contempt citations. And then the Republicans of the House walked out and had a press sort of event on the steps of the Capitol. Meanwhile, Nancy Pelosi also talked about it. She said that the president had manipulated the facts, and she said, look, we take an oath of overseeing, of congressional oversight. We have a three branches of government, and we're just trying to do our oversight, and the Bush people are trying to get in our way.
The original House bill on FISA did not have immunity for these telecoms. The Senate, as we know, voted for it. As the House
currently does not have that immunity, that's correct.
Okay, are the blue dogs going to switch in the House? What's going to happen?
My guess is that the blue dogs are going to switch in the House, and so we'll have some kind of evil FISA bill for the next 6 years, unless somebody overturns it if we get a different president.
You know, one of the big points here is if there is no court hearing on this, we're never going to find out what happened. We're never going to hear the evidence.
Well, that's right. And, of course, the deal supposedly was that they were going to turn over some of this evidence. They were going to turn over some of who they had been wiretapping, et cetera. But, I wouldn't hold my breath for that. The other big news, there's a lot of big news today, but the other big news is that at 4 Eastern today, Romney is going to talk about his 280 delegates and asking them to vote now for McCain. That would mean that McCain was very, very close to those 1,191 delegates if he gets Romney's delegates.
You know, Ellen, we're speaking with Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News, talkradionews.com. I was speaking before a Democratic group down in Lake Oswego, Oregon last night, and I got questioned a number of times, why is Mike Huckabee staying in this race? He has no chance to win. Is it just he just likes the attention? He wants to have influence? It's not costing him anything? What's the deal?
Well, I think it isn't really costing him a whole lot. He wants to have influence, and you can't blame the guy. So I think that that's really where he's, where he's going. And if Romney had switched his delegates over to him, he would have actually had a chance.
Right, but not now.
But not now. I mean, it's just not mathematically possible.
You know, Ellen, there's so much talk about these superdelegates and whether they're going to decide the thing. But I get the sense now that the superdelegates have heard enough complaints that they're kind of pulling back in a way and are not going to commit. They're going to wait to see if Obama or Clinton has a reasonable lead, has won more states, because they don't want to muck up. They don't want to be seen as mucking up the process now. So they're not going to jump in. Is that the feeling you get, that they're going to wait now?
Definitely the feeling that I get. I think that most of them are not going to declare at this point. Unless there's somebody like David Wilhelm that has his big foot in Chicago. And so I think that they're going to wait and see what happens and who comes up with the closest and more delegates.
Yeah, because when conventions in the past, I mean, in 1980, when Ted Kennedy challenged Jimmy Carter, President Jimmy Carter, Carter really had enough delegates, but Kennedy went all the way to the convention that year in 1980 and tried to challenge the seating of certain delegates and didn't want them bound to Carter, and took that fight, and despite the hostages and all that, that really hurt Jimmy Carter in the general election.
Well, and this could, if there is a protracted fight that goes much past May, which is when Oregon, as you know, since you're there right now, has their primary, I think that this could just be a disaster.
You know my dream, Ellen. You know my dream for Oregon to decide it all on May 20th with our primary.
I know.
You're going to be the moderator of the debate in our studios. How about that?
I'm telling you, I'm gonna come there.
I've only promised that to about 50 people, but I really mean it when I talk.
Well, I'll be there. You see, then you're gonna have to fight us all off. We're gonna have to play musical chairs.
You know, I'll tell you, the one thing that gets me is this cave on FISA if it's coming, because I'll tell you, even in the Senate. Even in the Senate yesterday, or a couple days ago, there were two amendments that were rejected. Arlen Specter and Sheldon Whitehouse got together and said, let's substitute the government for the telecoms and the lawsuits. If people want to sue, let's put the government in the place. They voted that down. Dianne Feinstein had another amendment, said, let's have the FISA court decide if these lawsuits against the telecoms have merit or not. And they voted that down, too. I just don't get it.
They also voted down Feinstein's basic amendment to take a look and have more supervision. I mean, it's really outrageous.
Yeah, 31 votes in the Senate against granting immunity to these telecoms who were complicit in George Bush's illegal wiretapping. Barack Obama, to his credit, voted against it. Hillary Clinton did not vote. John McCain, of course, voted for it. Why wasn't Hillary there? Did she just not, she didn't want this coming up in the campaign trail?
Well, I think
trail,
Hillary really
pass,
was very worried. She may not have wanted her vote recorded, but I think she was very worried about the primary, as well she should have been.
Yeah, you don't think she's hedging a little bit on national security?
No, because
here?
She's going to have to answer how she would have voted.
Yeah, okay. Ellen, thank you so much for joining us. Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News, talkradionews.com. I'll see you on the morning show, I'm sure. Ellen, thanks.
You got it. Thank you.
Indeed, Ellen Ratner, and boy, a lot going on in Washington. Tom Hartman on his way to Reno. He'll be broadcasting live from Reno affiliate KJFK, 12:30 a.m. Tomorrow. And, of course, Bernie Sanders on that show, Friday's Brunch with Bernie. It's one of my favorite times to listen to the Tom Hartman show, a U.S. congressman just taking calls from you. I'm Carl Wolfson here in Portland with you and wishing you a happy Valentine's Day and reminding you it's your country. Get out there and take it back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit TomHartmanRadio.com.